Welcome to the Ortho Joke Podcast, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. Join hosts Mohit Bhandari and Mark Swankowski as they discuss current topics and publications in the world of orthopedics and beyond.
All right. Good morning, Mo.
Good morning. Good morning. Today's a unique day for both of us, and I'm looking forward to today's chat. And I hope others are too when they hear kind of what we're going to be talking about. But yeah, no coffee. I didn't need it. I was so excited about what we're going to talk about that I didn't need it. I didn't need any Java today.
I'm well prepared. and I've already had one. So I wanted to be in full form. But I just want to point out to you and those that are viewing that, again, I have a difference in attire with you. And for those that are interested in a discussion on appearance when presenting or at meetings, go to the archives. And I think it was 2022 when we had the great debate with a couple of really important contributors on what is the issue with the tie. Is it in fact extinct? So
good point. Good point. There is some evidence, isn't there?
Yeah. But yeah. Not in the life of fossils like me. It's not quite extinct yet.
And no.
Thanks to Jason Miller, the design of this tie is absolutely fabulous. And I don't know if there ever will be another one, given what we've learned. But that's not the topic. That's not the topic of today, right? So I don't remember exactly who came up with this idea. Whether it was you or Christina Nelson or, but it was, what do you read outside of orthopedics, and why?
So you're right. Yeah, right. And I have to believe that, many of us, across the spectrum of orthopedic care providers and musculoskeletal care providers, that, we do things outside of our work once in a while. And in fact, the things we read informs our day-to-day lives and our day-to-day work and hopefully enriches that. So a little bit of a departure from core orthopedics, but I do think it's probably a lot more about orthopedics than one might otherwise presume. So yeah, I think we should just maybe get into it. I don't know how you want to proceed. It was hard for me. It was hard for me to kind of narrow it down.
Sorry for interrupting, but you have done a lot of work in your presentations and your postings on LinkedIn about the advantages of having balance in one's life and not meeting with individuals in offices, but going on walks or having a cup of coffee in the value of those kinds of activities, cold shock therapy to get your brain running right, descending mountains on bikes at 80 miles an hour to get adrenaline to improve your thinking. So where does your overall philosophy of your life, where does reading for pleasure fit in, and how do you find time to do it given your schedule?
Yeah, I mean, so it's actually a pretty easy question for me, although you think it'd be harder, is I didn't do it. I didn't do it for probably two decades of my, sort of after university into the first couple of decades, I didn't do much of anything. It just worked, and you focused on publications and focused on research. And I came to a plateau, Mark, truly a plateau where, outwardly you might say, lots of papers, lots of things, lots of productivity, but there was a plateau on what I'll use the capital C word, creativity. And so now I make it almost a ritual habit of trying to get at least having a book on the go, whether I get through it or not. In one or two sittings is likely not the issue. It's just about getting time to spend time thinking about it. For me, it's planes. I've been in a plane a lot last few months. And so a lot of time to relax, and you can a little bit dissociate, and reading I think is really great there. But just a morning, great, kind of like we do, you and I chat, a morning cup of coffee, 30 minutes, just get, just read a few pages. Sometimes I'll surf on a book or on a particular age, so kind of find the right things to read are also kind of interesting. I'm curious how you find that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's been really good. I would say now I'm far more productive actually doing less writing in terms of the fewer papers, but more impact I'm thinking in my own mind. And, I guess that's for others to judge, but I feel better about it.
Yeah. Well, good. So you've already let us into one secret. I mean, you travel quite a bit. And so airplanes is good. an important question. Electronic books are actually a book you can hold.
Oh, you know, I like holding something, you know, and reading it through the pages. And that's probably a little bit goes back to, I mean, just where I am in life and when, you know, and actually handwriting. I really like that. So while I think electronic is just far more, it's you know, carrying a bag full of books is always not easy, but I like reading through the page.
I'm totally with you. I never have been able to do electronic books. I tried on the phone for a while. I actually, you'll be interested in this. I actually read Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky on my phone decade ago. And it was so painful that I'll never do it again. But a great book, though. I would put that on anybody's list.
Oh gosh, yeah. It's always the top 10 in pretty well anyone's list of great classics. For sure. Let me ask you this, Mark. Have you had has it been a habit of yours to read outside? And when did it start for you?
Oh, it started probably the very early part after residency. I mean, residency was just in those days, you know, before penicillin. It was even more rigorous than it is today as far as the time commitment. But it started actually when I did my fellowship. I did research in Switzerland in 1985 at the AO lab on the microcirculation of bone and soft tissues, mind you, not on clinical research. But I started reading Thomas Mann, the Zauberberg, the Magic Mountain, which is about Davos with the tuberculosis issue as a sanitarium, and have there's been ebbs and flows like in anybody's, but I have continued to try to always have one book and try to, even if it's really painful, to complete it. Yeah. Sometimes going a chapter a day kind of thing, and making it a point to exert the effort to put 10 or 15 minutes in it. Because it's a break. It's a break that adds to overall enjoyment in life. That's my philosophy.
And Mark, wouldn't you agree? And again, those listening in, if you've got comments and you got suggestions, I know definitely let us know. And we're definitely going to do more of this. So if someone finds this particular episode of interest, contact us. And if you've got some books to share, you know, we'll get you on. We'll get you on and we'll chat about it. And the thing I've learned is it takes about 30 seconds to a minute to when you're interacting with someone you've not met before in an orthopedic, let's say an orthopedic meeting, because, you know, just, you know, in lieu of where we're talking about Ortho Joe, it's very quickly, I can figure out whether this person has read. It's pretty clear, right? And you can also tell individuals who have only focused on orthopedic reading rather than just literature.
Right.
There's just a breadth of knowledge. There's a breadth, I dare I say they come across a little more interesting. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't want to say no to all the orthopedic keeners out there, but because I certainly was one. But I can tell you, I'll never forget my orthopedic residency. I won't name the program, but the chair said, you know, I was a medical student trying to get an orthopedic.
Right.
I remember, and the question, I didn't understand why this was, but he said, so what's the last book you've read? And I realized they were getting at, okay, what does this person do outside? And you know what I said? I said, well, Skeletal Trauma in Rockwood and Green, chapters 7 and 8. And I thought, yeah, I nailed it. Let's just say I didn't get into that program. but you see like how important it was. And I just didn't realize it. And I really do realize it now. And I do hope others who are listening in today probably are also reminiscing about the book or books that they find very helpful. I think that's good. We should share those books with the community, because if you read a good book and it's impacted you, it's probably going to impact others.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you go first. What's your...
So I'm going to rhyme a few off that were in the short list, and then I'm just going to talk briefly about the one that that resonates with me. And they're all books I've really enjoyed, and actually books I talk about when I speak. I speak a little bit now on creativity and what it means and my own learning. So this one, The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, you know, I probably in the last 50 presentations, this has been one of the key slides. And I talk a lot about what that's meant. It's a very easy read. And by the way, I think we can disclaim, you and I are getting nothing from this.
Yeah,
this is our personal enjoyment. I'm not getting any royalties.
No royalties.
I just like the book. It reads like a children's book, quite frankly, and maybe that's just because I like reading easy books. I don't know, but it's really powerful. and talks about journey. And there's probably more metaphors in this that hit you along the way. I won't get into it because this isn't the book I chose. Yeah. Another one that was, I was just fascinated by the style of writing was Ernest Hemingway, The Old Man and the Sea. And obviously, you know, these are individuals who have had some acclaim with either lots of book sales, but in this particular case, you know, winning some prizes. So, you know, a Nobel Prize in literature isn't a bad thing. A Pulitzer Prize isn't a bad thing. And you're reading this book, again, very simple, simple, simple. This was the one that actually struck me, another Pulitzer Prize winning book on the Emperor of Maladies. Just stories of India, series of short stories. But, you know, it's like, you know, one of those things where you're driving down a highway and you think, oh, okay, I think I know this is going to end. And then, bam, there's a twist. Everyone. And you just cannot see it coming. But it's like the painful ebbs and flows of life. So I like that. But to get to what I want to talk about is there is a music producer, Mark, Rick Rubin. I don't know if you've heard of Rick Rubin, but he's written
not.
A book. No. Well, let me tell you a little bit about him before I tell you, show you the book. So Rick Rubin's, at least by some, is considered one of music's most influential producers and successful producers. And the reason I think it's interesting is he has been able to transcend a genre. So, you know, there's often producers in various genres, but he has basically gone on to work with very famous groups, anywhere from like the rap Jay-Z to Adele, the Beastie Boys. Some people will get this. You may not know some of these, but I suspect you know all these bands. Heavy metal groups like Metallica, Red Hot Chili Peppers, our prime minister's favorite band, Weezer, their new prime minister's favorite band, Weezer, AC/DC, Johnny Cash. Like this is a person who's like a chameleon. You know, he's been able to do it all, and he's done, you know, he's won multiple Grammy Awards. And what he does, and the quote I think that I'll start off with is what he says is, all that matters is that you are making something you love to the best of your ability here and now. And this is really the fundamental foundations of a book that he has written. This was released in January 2023 called The Creative Act, A Way of Being. And he says, this isn't for artists and musicians. It's a guide for anyone looking to live a rich and creative life. So it was almost like it was written for someone like me, which is, there it is.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a fairly beefy book, but when you actually open it up, it's relatively fast. I got through this on literally a flight and I was page to page. Like, and for me to say, no, thank you, I won't have lunch. It's interesting. Like, she goes, really? No, I'm into this book. I'm going to miss my whatever they give me, your peanuts and your crackers and whatever else. So I'll leave with one quote, Mark, which I think is fundamental. And it says here, and I think this is what I think has helped me think about research and all the other things I'm trying to do, which is, he writes, look for what you notice, but no one else sees. And I think that's the fundamental, like, crux, right, of getting to something different. And oftentimes when you and I have talked lots about research and the ideas we have, and we're trying to publish something, and it seems like it's just getting, you know, wall after wall after wall, because people say, oh, it's already been done, or you can't be done, or no, this isn't interesting. Sometimes maybe that's the thing. And it's taught me a lot not to get overwhelmed just because others don't think it's important. If you feel it in the here and now, do it. But fundamentally, I think it does help you, you know, in your job, in the life you have, in trying to be a bit more creative. That's my two cents on that.
Oh, that's great. I didn't bring a stack of books to show, which I, you know, that's one thing we should let the audience know. The preparation that you and I do for these sessions is like zero.
No,
it's just,
this is just
friends talking.
I wouldn't say winging it, but just that I have them sitting here because I'm sitting in my home talking to you. So that's the only reason I have.
Yeah. But I did give a lot of thought, and I will just say that there's one author that I read on a daily basis over and over again, and that's Solomon, the Book of Proverbs, because it's an easy thing. There's 31 chapters, and so each day of the month, you know, I go to that. And wisdom, you know, he chose wisdom over anything he could have in the universe. And of course, he got everything else because of it. So that would be, I would think, my number one. But so just a couple of things. So funny, you should hold up The Old Man and the Sea. Hemingway, absolute favorite. I think the opening line of that book is, he was an old man and fished alone.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm pretty sure. That book I've read probably 10 times.
That's exactly right. He's an old man who fished alone in a skiff in the Gulf Stream, and he had gone 84 days now without taking a fish.
Exactly. But I've read everything in Hemingway's portfolio, several of them more than once, and that one is at the top. But For Whom the Bell Tolls, I could go on and on.
Can I just ask you, before you get to your unveil, and you've already unveiled one, which is really great, is what is it about Hemingway's writing style? Because I'll tell you, when you read it, like there's no fluff. Like there's no, it is literally, like when he puts together a sentence, and again, it helps you think about scientific writing, helps you think about writing, right? Just there's really every word needs to be there, not one word more, not one word less. And it's amazing how he does that.
I couldn't agree more. And he's not afraid of the run-on sentence.
And
with great effect. And it flows so well.
Yeah.
Obviously, a very troubled individual, tragic life, etc. But absolutely best. So let me just run the list here. I've got a couple of colleagues, Dave Fisher and Ed Craig, who are partners. And we do a book club. And we like historic accounts. Let me just run through a couple of lists here. So we like David Moranis, and of course Dave and Ed were both taking care of professional athletes. So a couple that we had read that we'd highly recommend is When Pride Still Mattered is the Lombardi. I think the best work on Lombardi, and talks about the origins of the NFL, et cetera, and a wonderful leader with all of his flaws. And then the one that we started with is called Path Lit by Lightning, which is the Jim Thorpe biography. I would say the best work on Jim Thorpe. There's just all kinds of stuff in there about the early beginnings of college football. And, we still have these problems today. They were playing in 1914, in front of 70,000 people in Yankee Stadium, literally for hundreds of thousands, if not close to $1 million of gate, to watch Army play the Carlisle Indian School, and all of the origins of this, and the difficulties of this great Native American athlete, won the decathlon and pentathlon in the Helsinki Olympics. Stockholm Olympics. Great athlete. Those are really good. Then we like Cherno, who wrote the Hamilton biography that was taken up and became Broadway play. Yeah. And right now we're trying to get through Mark Twain, which is really, really good. Another one that we've shared is Eric Larson, who wrote The Devil in the White City, which is around the time of the Great World Convention. There was a serial killer going on. Fantastic book. Really easy to read. And the last one we read is called Demons of Unrest, which is the initiation of the Civil War in Charleston, basically the decision to light cannons and fire on Fort Sumter. All of the incredibly difficult stuff with Lincoln's election and on and on and on. And then the last one is, I really enjoy James Herriot, the English veterinarian, wrote half a dozen books on his life as a country vet in England. So that's my list for anybody who finds what I read of any interest at all.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark. I mean, so I haven't formally done this. I mean, I read, and, occasionally there'll be, individuals will ask. I've had sometimes people say, hey, what's on your reading list? And it's a question you rarely get, actually. I don't get it off, but when I do get it, it's interesting. And I think about it and I say, oh, here's what I'm up to now. But, what's good for me may not be good for somebody else. But
of course,
the idea of a reading club is very interesting to me. And I am curious whether, and I suspect you're not alone in this. I suspect there's probably lots of groups listening in who are doing this. And if you're not, what are the advantages of doing that? Is this something we should be doing for faculty, for residents? We have journal clubs. We could have reading clubs. The one argument always is time.
Yeah.
And how do you value time? I think this is the best value for time, actually, more than anything else we do. But I'm curious what your take is.
Well, it's an accountability thing. So you kind of have a deadline. We usually try to meet three times a year to get through a book. And then the insight, the questions that they ask, they get a different perspective on the what are the key aspects of a book or a life in the case of a biography. And it's just really enjoyable to share a meal and talk about the book. That's the way we do it. I think there's a lot more women that do book clubs than men. And I think men should do it more often, or there should be mixed sex book clubs because the insights that other individuals have on a book are very refreshing. And you get so much more out of the discussion. It leads to getting more out of the book. Very worthwhile.
Yeah, I fully agree with you on that. You know, everyone reading the same novel or Hemingway short story, for example, is going to have a slightly different perspective. It's going to mean something different to them because we've all grown up and there's certain elements of stories that just resonate with our own lives. And I think sharing that is particularly important, not to mention just style. Stylistically, you see, you know, there's something great about hearing, watching and reading a great writer. It just, and you hope it rubs off on you because you think, wow, this writing is so elegant and simple. It's almost easy. It looks easy. And then you try writing and you realize, no, it's not easy. It's not easy at all, right? Yeah. The idea is the thing, but even the writing style is so impressive and different among different groups. So yeah, I think we should be thinking more about this. I think we should be doing much more than we do. I do have one other little addendum I did want to share with you is in the same way, like, I've recently also got a little bit more into just, you know, the idea of storytelling and how do you get there? And, you know, it's always through sort of serendipity of you run in or you start thinking, you go down a little bit of a wormhole of looking at songs and songwriting. So, you know, there are two individuals, both who have had great, great success with respect to their writing ability, two very different genres as songwriters. I suspect you might resonate with one or the other. I don't know those who are listening in, but I recently just read the words of Bob Dylan's 1965 single, Like a Rolling Stone. I won't get into it, but, you know, he won the Nobel Prize in, was it 2016 at the age of 75. Yeah. A little bit of controversy about him not wanting to get it, but he did finally do a talk. And his big thing was, don't read my words aloud. Like, listen to them. Like they're meant to be sung. Mm. But I tell you, it is fascinating when you see someone who's able to tell a story. And the quote around him was very interesting. He won the Nobel Prize in 2016 for having created a new poetic expression within the great American song tradition. Yeah. And if you, that folk, and by no means have I spent a lot of my time understanding folk genre, but I can tell you his storytelling is just brilliant. I went through the album recently on the weekend and it's just absolutely peaceful. I don't know if you have anything to say about Bob Dylan or anything on songs and how they touch you and the writing being equally powerful in the storytelling.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. How can I not comment on a great Minnesotan since I'm sitting here in Minneapolis, but you know, he's from the Iron Range. By the way, he has an autobiography called Chronicles. And we'll talk about his, where he talks about his early days. And he really is a poet. And he really transitioned to music because it could reach more people than, you know, there's not a ton of people that read poetry. And that was a philosophical direction that he took to reach more individuals with his poems. And they read like poems. And for me, the you know, songwriter poets that I would get a lot of value is Canadian Joni Mitchell.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah.
Right. And then a kid from Southern California who attended a high school 8 miles from my high school, Jackson Brown.
All right. Another great. So, yeah, right.
So those are two songwriter poets that I enjoy a lot.
Now there may be some generational gaps here, so I'm gonna leave on this one. So Kendrick Lamar, I know there's some people think, finally someone I know, Kendrick Lamar. Yeah. Well, you know, Kendrick Lamar had a recording by the quote, the album called Damn that was released in 2017. Yeah. So powerful. And what they said is that he actually won the Pulitzer Prize, Mark, in 2018 for that album, for the writing. similar to Bob Dylan in a different genre, in rap and hip hop. They write that a virtuoso song collection united by its authenticity and rhythmic dynamism that offers affecting vignettes capturing the complexity of modern African-American life. And, you know, he has just been that individual that, you know, who when you read, you can hear the song, but you need to, and I guess the Super Bowl, he was, you know, he was the act.
Yeah.
And, you know, to various levels of acclaim, I think he did exactly what he did. He stayed true to who he is. And the writing, I think, is so powerful. And I think it just gets back to it, right? Whatever your genre is, whatever you like, you're going to find poets, you're going to find writers, and you're going to use that hopefully to inspire. I mean, I could talk all day about this stuff, and I'm sure you could too. But you know, the one thing I will do that I didn't take away is I think I'm going to start a book club. I mean, you and I I enjoyed this so much.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and maybe we should think about what others think, those who are listening. And if you have ideas about what's working for you, please let us know.
We're
genuinely interested. Genuinely interested.
Yeah. Well, it's been great chatting about this topic. We obviously both have a lot of passion about it. And I want to thank you personally for suggesting I read The Prophet, which I've read twice. It is a great book.
Yeah, isn't it? It's a pretty good. Yeah, it's a pretty really good. There's good. Lot, you know what? I'll send you a copy of The Creative Act. I think you'll find it very simple, and you'll get through it in an hour, like literally an hour, on your next plane ride. And you will miss the flight. You will definitely not want to eat on the plane. So just go ready to go. Because once you open the book, you're going to keep going. I know that. I guarantee it.
All right. Well, have a great day. And
you too.
You're probably headed to Tim Hortons, I would guess.
Tim Hortons, but actually I'm heading to the Canadian Orthopedic Association meeting early tomorrow morning. So I'm getting preparations for that.
Yeah.
And looking forward to promoting and getting people to think JVJS. That's the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great day, Mo.
You too. Take care.